Let's pour some more Macallan. What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. Or should I say, Rabbit Hole Recap with Matt and Marty before I introduce my new co-host for a new segment we're doing. Let me sort of introduce it, the concept behind this. So one of the constant feedbacks that I get is that people love the conversations, love the in-depth conversations with the guests that I have on. If you're looking for more of like a news-like program vibe of a recap of the most pertinent recent events in the space. So ask and ye shall receive. I've been having a conversation on the side here with a good friend of mine for the last couple of weeks, trying to put this together, and finally got him to agree to do this. It wasn't that hard, actually. So he's already been on the podcast before, so actually one of your favorite episodes. So welcome back to Matt O'Dell.
How's it going, guys? Happy to be here. It definitely was not a hard sell. So basically what we're trying to do here is it's going to be a week in review. We're going to record every Tuesday, try and drop it as quick as possible. It'll be separate, but on the same feed as your usual Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, it's a little, it's a different vibe. It's not the interview vibe. We're going to try not to get as drunk as I do when I interview people.
We are drinking, though.
We are drinking.
Because that's an important aspect of your podcast, as I've constantly reiterated.
Well, this is our podcast now, Matt.
Right.
At least
these episodes. One of my favorite parts of your podcast.
Is the drinking. It really opens people up. So it's actually a powerful tool for me. I get smart people to get drunk and loosen up a bit and disclose some information.
Yeah. The best is Nick's most recent pod with you, Nick Carter. Mm-hmm. You got him drunk, and he promised all of us that it was going to be his only podcast.
And he lied.
And then he went and he did three other podcasts, I'm pretty sure.
I think he's up to seven now, actually.
Seven. Wow.
I'm kidding.
Look at that.
I don't know what the number is, but
it's no longer a scarce resource.
It's never been a scarce resource. He lied. He lied. He pre-mined. He scheduled a bunch of podcasts and told me it was only going to be one.
That's why you don't trust centralized actors.
No, never.
They'll always inflate the supply.
But enough about that scoundrel. Back onto the topics of the week. So it's been a big week in crypto. You have had a couple of fire threads. I guess we'll start with Bitmain's IPO. And it seems like a lot of people were very bullish on it a few weeks ago. Not so much anymore. A lot of drama around Bitmain right now. There's some rumors that their reported revenues from last quarter were precipitously lower than previously thought a couple weeks ago. And they have a big bag of shitcoins. Matt, why don't we dive into that? Their shitcoin exposure.
So we had Samson Mao earlier this week. He leaked some docs, and they're holding major bags of Bitcoin Cash. So they have 1 million Bitcoin Cash that they're just holding. They can't sell it. If they sell it, they're gonna tank the price. And they have a bunch of other altcoins as well. What do they have there? They have 930,000 Litecoin. So they have almost a million Litecoin, a million Bitcoin Cash, 312,000 Dash, and 1,000 Ethereum.
22,000 Bitcoin.
And 22,000 Bitcoin.
Bitcoin proper.
This is as of March, I'm pretty sure. So we're not really sure exactly what they have right now. Mm-hmm. But I imagine they couldn't sell that Bitcoin Cash and the Litecoin, right? Without tanking the price.
Yeah. Charlie Lee was the first big sell in Litecoin at the top. I don't think you're going to be able to replicate that at any point.
It was a good timing on his part, but I'm not sure about the ethical situation there.
Yeah, especially going on CNBC and doing. But
he did call it pretty much perfectly.
I'm pretty sure, like, exactly perfectly. But enough about Charlie Lee. Bitmain's financials. So they're approaching their IPO. Apparently, there's rumors that Tencent and
How did they end up with so much Bitcoin Cash? So some people are saying that they were actually selling their Bitcoin because their Bitcoin amount was going down, and they were buying Bitcoin Cash with it to try and push up the price.
seems about right.
And then the other thing they had was they only sold their miners with Bitcoin Cash. You could only buy their ASICs. It didn't matter which algorithm you wanted to mm-hmm. mine on. You were going to buy a Dash miner from them. You'd have to buy it with Bitcoin Cash. All of them had to be bought with Bitcoin Cash. So they were making their customers basically do the prop of the price up for them. But then they get stuck with these big bags.
And the price broke a pretty strong technical level at 0.09 the other last week.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And 0.1 before that.
Yeah, I would say 0.1 is right, is the technical.
Yeah.
That's what they were holding at, 10% of a Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I mean, that pretty much... If everything else didn't tell you that the fork is sealed, the price tells you. You know, the market has decided it's less than 10% of a Bitcoin. You know, anyone who says that Bitcoin Cash is Bitcoin is frankly full of shit.
Well, do you think they're IPOing to save their ass because their balance sheet is so piss poor with their holdings?
That's what I think.
Yeah,
you think so too, right?
I mean, I don't know if I know enough to say.
Supposedly, their recent wafers have also, you know,
yeah,
their most recent production run has been like wrought with failures.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing they probably overextended themselves a little bit. All those shitcoin bags they have are all miners that they sold. You know, they have miners for those algorithms. They have a Dash miner. They have a Litecoin miner, and. Actually, I'm not that surprised that Ethereum's so low is because...
They don't have GPU miners.
I think they've been hesitant to go to Ethash because Ethereum likes... The Ethereum community would be more likely to fork them out. You know, I don't think they thought Monero would, but Monero ended up doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another story altogether, but... But the fact is that they were probably a little bit too scared to touch Ethash for that reason.
I would agree. And then...
And the POS shift, right? And
yeah.
And the proof of stake shift, that'll never
That's
happen.
That's a big risk. That'll never happen. I've actually made that prediction on Twitter last week. I predicted that Ethereum will never transition to proof of stake. Haven't bet anybody. It's just a prediction. I don't know.
You could bet it on Augur.
I don't even feel like going through that effort. But... I will say, just another a parting note on Bitmain. I think Bitmain is your classic Icarus story. Like this time last year, after the hard fork, I think Jihan and crew really thought that miners ran the chain and decided the rules and would have a lot of swaying power, via their hash power at the end of the day. And after the Bitcoin Cash and hard fork and the user-activated soft fork, it sort of proved that nodes run the network, and that thesis that Jihan and Bitmain had was proven wrong, and since they've been trying to save face, and maybe the last straw is an IPO. This is just a theory. This is what I think, but I think Jihan and crew flew a little too close to the sun after a lot of hard work and a lot of positioning to get themselves in a profitable space and profitable place in the ecosystem.
The weird thing is that I do tend to agree with you. Flew too close to the sun, but the problem was they flew too close to the sun and they didn't make the move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like November, December, they added Bitcoin Cash, got Ninja added to Coinbase. It went up to like 0.5 Bitcoin.
the Ninja.
You know, that was like, it was like a bullshit price, but it did, right?
Mm-hmm.
At that point, when there was all this confusion and like there was... Like I know people that panic sold some Bitcoin for Bitcoin Cash because there was like for a 2-hour period on like a random Tuesday night because of Coinbase,
right before Christmas,
right? Like what the fuck? They Ninja added it. It went up to like 0.5. At that point, if Bitmain had just switched all their hash power over to Bitcoin Cash, you know, they probably had like 50% around 50% of the hash rate. If they had just switched that over to Bitcoin Cash at that point, coupled with Bitcoin Cash's difficulty algorithm, they probably could have forced a Bitcoin POW change.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do that. And It was because they were afraid that they might be wrong, right? And they were too scared to kill the golden goose that is Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin is everything to them. It makes them the lion's share of their profits. They don't want to kill that, and they didn't make that move. So they flew too close to the sun, but didn't, you know, take it out.
Yeah, I would agree.
And now this seems like a desperation move. I would say the IPO is heavy desperation.
Yeah, and we'll see how it plays out as we get closer and closer to the IPO date. A lot of drama. Apparently, we already mentioned this, but apparently their revenues were not as high as previously expected. And then on top of this, you have a bifurcation of the Bitcoin Cash community. They're about to hard fork. They're splitting up into two regimes, Jihan Wu and Dr. Craig Wright.
Don't put doctor in front of his name. Fake Toshi.
But I'm interested. I don't think Roger has picked it, chosen a side yet. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So that's Bitmain news. We're gonna try and keep the show to an hour. So we're gonna get on to the next topic. Let's shift to Bitcoin Core, what we all came here for. I went to the BitDevs meetup here in New York City last night. Incredible meetup. Hosted by or moderated by Jay and John Newberry, and John gave a great presentation on the upcoming upgrade of Bitcoin Core protocol, version 0.17.0. Before we dive into that, I want to say last night's BitDevs meetup in particular was very interesting because we had Eric from the Lib Bitcoin team in town, and he came and gave a presentation on Lib Bitcoin. Which I thought was fascinating, and it's crazy, like the way that node software runs compared to Bitcoin Core. So definitely look into Lib Bitcoin. They do things differently, but it's fascinating the different approaches these different teams have to creating nodes to run within consensus. But Core version 0.17. So John gave an incredible presentation on what's being rolled out in version 0.17.0 of the Bitcoin Core software project. Most interesting part of the presentation was the stats of how many new contributors there are to the project in general. There's 60 since the last upgrade, which was 16 point something, 67 new people have contributed to the Bitcoin Core repository, which is an incredible stat. Like to have that many new people a decade into this free and open source software project, becoming interested in it and interested enough to develop the skills to actually get some commits pushed through. It's a good fundamental indicator.
Absolutely.
And another fun fact. Only 13% of the commits in this version of Core were committed by Blockstream employees. So the Blockstream conspiracy.
That narrative. Can we put that to rest, Vaughn?
I would like to, but I think it's funny to. I think we can turn this like into like a maximalist meme where we turn on everybody else. And it's like, ooh, this 13% of this project is trying to take over the world.
The Blockstream. What's their investor that everyone uses?
AXA.
AXA, yeah. The Blockstream AXA conspiracy.
Bilderberg. Bilderberg's in there, too.
Yeah, they throw Bilderberg in. Might as well throw Bilderberg in.
Gotta throw Bilderberg in. Can't have a good conspiracy theory without Bilderberg.
That's extremely impressive that we got. And they were, most of them were first time, right? There was a lot of first time contributors.
Oh, yes, first time contributors. Yeah, 67.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and like the virality of the testing. Reviewing, pull request, commits, all that is very strong right now. There's a lot of interest in that repository.
I just think the whole ecosystem surrounding Bitcoin Dev has just improved so tremendously over the last year or so.
Yeah, we had
even stuff with like Pierre's
Bitcoin X.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fantastic resource. Like you can just go to a website and just see it all right there very easily.
Yeah, incredible resource. BitcoinAxe.org, I believe it's a .org. And then on top of that, John Newberry had a very good, funny quote. A lot of people's favorite fundamental indicator out there is GitHub commits, mm-hmm. and he said that's a terrible metric to use because commits are not fungible. Some commits are a lot better than others.
And it's very easy to game commits.
Yes, you can change commas and...
And just keep submitting them, yeah.
Yeah. So be wary of using that metric as a...
Any metric...
Fundamental indicator.
Any metric that you can go home and game, just throw that metric out.
Yeah.
Or at least view it with a grain of salt.
Exactly. And then there was one more thing I want to add about this upgrade. Oh, so the upgrade is September 9th. If you're a developer, I am not. They need help testing before the official merge on the 9th. I think it's a tentative date. But if you're a developer out there looking to help out with the core project, I think some testing between now and the next 2 to 3 weeks is much needed.
And definitely anyone, especially if you're a dev, but if just everyone should really subscribe to Bitcoin Ops newsletter,
yeah.
Their new newsletter, which is at bitcoinops.org.
Yeah, definitely do that. Actually just came out with one today. It was a little short and sweet, but it was good. Always like good signal to noise, actually.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's absolutely
very
exceptional.
Little to no noise.
Okay, shall we?
Yeah, I think we should jump into Square Cash.
Square Cash.
This is you. This is you.
All 50 states, we got Square Cash now. So the Square Cash
Georgia
app,
Georgia's struggling. It's last
was
one.
Georgia the last one?
I think Georgia was the last one.
Horrible money laws down in Georgia. they had to go state by state. But so Marty actually shills it on his pod, even though they don't pay him.
Hey,
for
Jack,
it at all.
Jack, I'm working for free out here.
Square is Jack Dorsey's company. He's famously the CEO of both Twitter and Square. They make those little rectangle pucks that you see like connected to iPads that you could swipe your credit card on.
Yep.
And now they have a Venmo competitor. They have the Cash App, which is amazing how simple that name is that mm-hmm. people have just grasped onto it. There's like this whole grassroots community. I think there's like 50 rap songs out right now that that mention
Cash
App. Oh,
Travis Scott just gave out 100K.
Cash at me.
Cash tag. No, send me your cash tag.
It just sounds good. Send me your cash tag. It's literally a hashtag with the freaking dollar sign, and it's just viral.
Yeah.
Right? And it's simple. It's just a nice, simple app. You can buy Bitcoin on it. You can kind of sell Bitcoin on it only if you...
You can sell Bitcoin on it.
But you have to have bought it on the platform because you can't deposit Bitcoin. You can withdraw Bitcoin. So all
from
these
what
services,
I understand, they're about to... like they're
Yeah,
in
but
the
they
process.
Haven't done that yet.
Yeah, not yet.
You they're can't deposit yet. You can withdraw.
Yes.
And you should withdraw. You shouldn't keep your Bitcoin on any of these centralized services, but the Cash App is extremely easy to use. Their prices are cheaper than Coinbase, which is what most people are using. In America, at least.
The UX is better.
Yeah. Oh, the price does look like it's more expensive than Coinbase. But if you do the math after you buy some Bitcoin, if you do the math after fees and everything, Coinbase is actually more expensive. So that's... Marty and I are actually... We're friends with the project lead at Cash App. And I've expressed this to him because I think it's a UX failure, but it's actually cheaper than Coinbase in mm-hmm. practice.
Yeah, that's funny. I like the hidden fees in Coinbase. Like there's ways to game sort of exactly what's
going on. Yeah, especially
if
you go to like Coinbase.com and you don't sign in, like the price they show you isn't the price you're going to pay. And that's where most of the issue is with people. They go into the Cash App, they go to buy, and then they go to Coinbase.com and they see what the price is. And that's not the... So then the other thing about Square was... they got more downloads than Venmo.
They surpassed Venmo.
If you're like
That's
me,
huge.
All my friends use Venmo.
That's huge.
Like I use Venmo. It's like my main way to transfer money between friends, even as a Bitcoiner, because you know most of my friends don't accept Bitcoin, and the ones that do, I made them accept it at like 16K, 17K. And they're like a little upset about it, even though I did the reverse. I did the reverse. But they 33 million downloads. They passed Venmo.
It's insane. And. It makes sense, number one, because I think they offer, again, free ads for Cash App. You guys can start paying me whenever. I think they offer like a superior service to Venmo. Like your Cash Card, you have a debit card connected to it, and they have this boost program. Like every time I go to buy a cup of coffee, it's $1 off if
they
I use this
card. They give you a free card.
Yes.
and they ship the car
to you. And
it's
a cool-looking car.
You customize it. You customize. It's a Visa, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you customize the card. You can spend it anywhere Visa's accepted. They don't have to just accept Square. So it's basically like a bank account alternative. You can even get direct deposit.
Yeah, you can do ACH direct deposit to it.
And then they have this like clever reward system where you can switch your rewards every day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like pretty high.
Yeah, you can get 15% off Chick-fil-A, 15% off Chipotle, a dollar off coffee is what I use.
So once they offer deposits, Bitcoin deposits, you can basically, it's for all intents and purposes, it's a Bitcoin layer two solution that's centralized.
Exactly.
So you would send some Bitcoin into it, you know, maybe top it up with $100. You turn it into dollars, and then you can use your Cash App card anywhere with Visa, you know, and just and spend your Bitcoin anywhere if you so desire to spend your Bitcoin.
Yeah. So, and I think that's going to be crazy for adoption. Like, again, like we said, like Travis Scott was just giving out $100,000 on it. Like, send me your cash tag with a lyric.
That's crazy.
Yeah, for Astro City. Like,
and some people think that was Astro it wasn't World, sponsored. It actually wasn't a sponsor. He was just like,
I'm gonna give away 100K.
There's some. I mean, he was buying followers. He was buying attention. That's what you do when you have these any kind of contest that offers money in return for likes and retweets and stuff is
the week you drop an album makes sense.
You're buying it.
It's a good hundred.
You're buying.
It's a good $100,000 investment.
But the important thing is that Cash App is viral. They support Bitcoin. They don't support any of the other altcoins or tokens. And
the
it's big for adoption. It's major for adoption. It sets up, right now we're in a bear trend, but the next bull trend, right?
Exactly. And
it sets it up.
I don't want to keep shitting on Coinbase here, but I think the Cash App team is more focused. In my opinion, Coinbase is spread themselves too thin. They're going
Coinbase is in Ethereum land right now. All their acquisitions are Ethereum focused. They put out a good product, but they're centralized. They have too much control over the space.
Anytime there's a lot of volume, like their apps go to shit.
Yeah, I mean, I hate Coinbase as much as the next guy, but they've never had a major hack. You know, they got siphoned from the ETC. They had that ETC exploit when Ethereum Classic. They didn't want to support it at first, so they were leaking a bunch of ETC.
People were able to double spend on Poloniex or something like that.
I'm not sure. They were pulling it out of Coinbase.
Yeah,
they were basically every time they withdrew Ethereum, they were also getting ETC because Coinbase was pretending that Ethereum Classic didn't exist, even though it was the original chain.
Exactly.
And then they also had the issue with if the fees didn't come down, they had a ton of freaking transactions that were
4 million UTXOs that were just
unspendable.
And that's UTXOs, not dollars.
Basically, they had like all these little transactions where the fee was higher than the value in the UTXO set. So they were unspendable. So if the fees didn't come down, they would be completely screwed. But besides that, they've never actually had like a major hack or anything.
No.
The interface is like pretty good. The cash stored on it, I'm pretty sure is FDIC'd.
They're cold maybe not wallets.
Actually, so it actually
no, they're hot wallets. So like only a
no.
Like,
I'm talking about the USD, but I'm not actually sure on that. But I'm pretty sure the USD on it is FDIC insured.
That's
they have like a partner bank.
That, yeah, I was gonna say
that does it.
They're hot wallets versus like 1% of their holdings.
Regardless, you shouldn't use Coinbase. Just use Cash App.
Well, let's give some Coinbase some like I've said this on this
now
podcast before.
Around.
We would not be here without Coinbase.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
We would not be here.
That's all I'm trying to say is that I think they put out like a pretty solid product. Mm-hmm. My biggest issue with them is that too many people use them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And way too many people use them as a wallet.
Yeah, like that dude. Oh,
right?
This
like,
is a good segue.
Don't store your money on Coinbase.
This is another
thing. If you want to use Coinbase, just buy on Coinbase, transfer them out to a wallet where you control the private keys. Like don't play that game. You're just playing with fire. You play with fire, you're going to get burnt.
Yeah, well, I'm happy you brought that up because there is currently, this is another current news, there is a lawsuit in the world right now. This dude, Michael Turpin, is suing AT&T because he got...
forgot about this.
Yeah, so he got.
I'm glad you thought of this.
He got phone ported. Somebody
twice.
Somebody went to
twice. It's his fault.
Well, apparently there was.
It's Michael's fault.
Apparently there was an insider at AT&T who like helped make this happen.
Doesn't matter.
But.
Michael
Turpin
was known, right?
Yes.
He was Bitcoin Foundation, wasn't he at one point?
I'm not positive, but he was holding $24 million in a Coinbase account.
I knew Michael Turpin was a Bitcoiner. I knew that he was an early Bitcoiner with a big wallet. Like, I knew he had a lot of Bitcoin, you know? And, like, for him to store it on Coinbase and to have his phone number known, which it was probably known to a bunch of people... He had two factors set up with his phone number, right? It was SMS.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It was SMS.
Well, you could have it. There's a separate two-factor that's...
You could do Authy.
Yeah. I mean, you download an app and you scan the QR code and it links it. It's based on time protocol or whatever, OTP, I think.
Yeah, and you get a new password like every 20 seconds.
That's the way to do it. Don't use SMS because you might get ported. But you shouldn't even have any Bitcoin on Coinbase.
Exactly.
To begin with. That's...
Like, I don't have the stress at all.
But anyway, he's suing, how much, $225 million,
I think 10x the value, so $240
million. Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like, not only was it my fuck-up that I stored it with them, but now I'm going to, you know, sue them for extra amount for my hardship.
Yeah, the funniest part of this.
They shouldn't be able to port so easily. I do give him that argument, but it is his fault.
Yeah,
at the
end
of the day, it's his fault.
So this is a good news topic. That's the debate right now. Who's at fault here, AT&T or Coinbase? Should Coinbase have a better user experience, or is AT&T negligent for allowing these
Well, it is actually, it is.
I think it's a combination.
But he's not
of both.
Suing Coinbase.
No, he's suing AT&T.
Right.
But
okay.
I think AT&T is trying to drag Coinbase
into
this.
It's more Coinbase's fault because... Yeah. You should have, I mean, $25 million, I feel like you should have some kind of extra authentication. Like,
hey, I know you might not be OPSEC conscious, but...
that goes both ways.
Like, that's somewhere where you have, like, an internal, like, not HR, but, like a biz dev manager, like, hey, I notice you have $24 million in your hot wallet. I think it would be wise to take advantage of some of our custodial services.
But,
we can get that into cold,
multi-sig
wallets.
But even that, like, I think this goes... that would go through the custodial service, probably.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, who the fuck has $25 million? I hope that the transactions were like slow bleeds, like the person who was compromising.
Imagine
him,
if it wasn't. Imagine
was,
if they
was doing, you know, 10 Bitcoin at a time or something. But if it was a $25 million transaction at once, like to use just SMS seems a little bit.
Yeah, that should warrant like a Skype call.
But that's not an AT&T. That's on Coinbase.
Yeah,
so you're like a personal visit.
Yeah,
like
exactly. Exactly.
$9.
You should have like a briefcase with the handcuffs, like handcuffed to your hands. Like, I've got the third private key.
I can't believe that happened. That really, third if it wasn't private. In legal docs, I just wouldn't believe that. Would be one of those rumors that somebody, oh, did you hear Michael Turpin got ported? I would just wouldn't believe it. I would just think it was bullshit.
Yeah, would you be too embarrassed to file this lawsuit?
I definitely for that amount. I would probably file for the bare minimum and just be like, and I'd, yeah, I don't know. I just would never be in that situation.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. It's a shitty situation. Don't want to be there. But it does bring up an interesting debate, particularly in this space, phone porting, swatting, telecommunications companies in general have really shit the bed when it comes to OPSEC and helping their customers preserve their wealth. And that's a combination problem with the apps and the services that we use that require our phone numbers to
like
gain
ISP
access.
Censorship, right?
Yeah.
Just like blanket ISP censorship where the internet service provider is screwing with what you can connect to.
Exactly. So it's an interesting debate. I think that should be more hashed out, pun intended, in not only in the Bitcoin world, but beyond that, just in society as general. Like, hey, there's a big attack surface in this certain area of the internet, and it's being exploited more and more these days, especially as cryptocurrencies become proliferate.
Well, that's the beauty. One of the beauties of Bitcoin is that we're discovering all of these things that are inherently vulnerable, right? That you wouldn't know otherwise, but now all of a sudden people can make money exploiting them. So, you know, they come to surface. We actually get to see them happen.
They become more obvious. It's like,
yeah,
whoa.
Because people can exploit it and make money. Like, if you can make money on something, you're going to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So And well, one thing I would caution you, you should not leave your Bitcoins on these exchanges. But before you move them into cold storage, please do your research. Please know what you're doing. It is something to be taking very seriously, do very diligently and very carefully, and definitely test how to make a couple wallets, spin up an Electrum wallet or three, send a minuscule amount of Bitcoin to them at the lowest fee possible, just to make sure you know what you're doing. And then when you have complete confidence, move it to something like a Trezor or even like a paper wallet or crypto steal or something like that.
I would say the number one rule is don't store all your shit in one place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so use multiple. I like that idea that you just, you know, use multiple wallets. You know, Trezor and Ledger, we both respect a lot. You know,
never use a Ledger. Can't speak to Ledger.
I've used a Ledger. I respect it a lot. They have a very long track record, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't been exploited so far. They have some extra issues because they have a proprietary authentication chip in it,
mm-hmm.
that Trezor doesn't have, which is supposed to make it more secure from physical attacks, like if you actually have the device in your hands. Either way, neither has been exploited in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
So what I usually tell people is, you know, you have Trezor, Ledger. You know, if you have a lot of money, buy both, you know. Mm-hmm. Have some on both. And then you should also go like the paper wallet route as well. And just because we call it a paper wallet, you can print that shit on steel.
Like, exactly.
You print it on whatever you want, you know, stamp it, engrave it in something, you know, we call that a paper wallet.
Yes.
It's just when you're basically writing it down. And my favorite way is Tails. There's tails.boom.org, T-A-L-S. T-A-I-L-S, Tails, .boum.org. And you can download that. That's an operating system that you download onto a USB stick. They have Electrum built in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you can just run Electrum on that on a computer that's never connected to the internet. You record that seed down, and you have a nice little cold storage wallet there. It's like probably the easiest way to do like pretty fucking secure cold storage.
That's pretty dope. And then beyond that level, I would start building a web of trust. People you trust, hopefully family members that you don't have too much money tied up with, and figure out how to get a multi-sig operation going.
Oh, that's definitely important.
Yeah.
But you can even just add that. You just add that to the Element.
Mm-hmm.
So you have multiple ways, you know, so the multi-sig only controls a certain amount of your stash.
Exactly.
You know, and then worst comes to worst, if one thing gets, the whole point is it's compartmentalization. Whatever it is, it's like what the Titanic tried to use and failed. You mm-hmm. just want to have it all separated.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and worst comes to worst, you only lose a bit of
yeah,
it.
Is that why the Titanic cut in half? Because like it wasn't separated, and the water was just sloshing
they just got,
in,
they just
in the wrong
fucked
way.
That one up. That was just a complete fuck up. This is a shit coin of a ship.
Okay,
let's move on to the next. What's our next?
Well,
story,
let's move on to the next one. But remember, do not leave $24 million on an exchange.
Yeah, don't keep money on Bitcoin, Coinbase.
Learn how to spin up your own wallet and secure your own coins. Develop a web of trust and make sure you're 100% certain of what you're doing before you do it. So test it out.
And two-factor, use an app.
Exactly. Two-factor.
Do the OTP.
Google Authenticator. Yeah. If you're very hardcore, get a YubiKey.
Yeah, I don't even know if that really gives you, probably doesn't even, at the end of the day, doesn't give you that much more. Like, unless you're like dealing with state actors in your threat model.
Hey.
Which I don't think a YubiKey would necessarily
you can't count
help you.
You can't count out state actors.
But I don't not count out state actors, but I don't think my two-factor is going to stop them. So
okay.
I think your YubiKey will get intercepted in the mail or something.
That's a good point.
Amazon.
That's a good point.
If you can buy it in cash at the street corner.
I don't know if I trust that.
They can always intercept a package. Remember that.
That's true. All right. Next topic.
They.
The government.
Okay. What do we have next? We could go with Maduro's bullshit Petro.
Yes, let's do that.
So Maduro devalued his currency by 5 decimal points, I think. I think that's a 95%. I think he basically just took the black market rate as the official rate now. Either way, it's just like a complete shit show over there. And he said this new currency is going to be backed by the Petro.
What is the Petro, Matt? What is it?
We haven't gotten shit for details on that. It was originally supposed to be Ethereum-based, and now I'm pretty sure it's NEM-based, supposedly.
Yeah. I never knew, NEM was always in, like, the top 10, but I was like, what the NEM fuck is
just,
NEM?
NEM is, like, a bullshit shitcoin fork that... it's not a fork. I apologize. The NEM people got angry at me. I called it a fork in their Telegram channel. It's based on NXT, which is like one of the oldest bullshit shit coins that we had.
Is that a Bryce Wiener shitcoin?
I don't think NXT was, because it was like it wasn't good enough marketing for Bryce. We don't have any real details. Someone was looking into the addresses and nothing moved, and they pretended there was this big ICO. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. You have to click a button. It's all bullshit. The only thing that you have to know is that it's bullshit. They pretend it's backed by oil. There's no way you're trusting them. At the end of the day, it requires a full faith of the Venezuelan government. No one should give them that faith, right? So it's
what
just
are you
a bullshit
about? They've been an upstanding government.
That's just a poorly timed joke. And the point is that if he actually wanted to do an oil-based currency, the best way to do it would be Bitcoin. It's literally backed by energy.
Yeah, you made a great point about this today. So explain that. Like, you can literally you're sanctioned by the whole goddamn world. And I'm not fighting for the Maduro regime here.
But it'd be the smart move.
I'm fighting from a logic perspective. Like, if you're using logic and you're using, like, hey, I'm backed up against the wall.
A horrible regime.
I'm sanctioned by the whole fucking world.
They're idiotic. Everything.
I don't want to give advice to Nicolas Maduro here, but if you really want to do this right, like you said, turn the oil into the ground, into Bitcoin, and then you have somewhat of a capital reserve that you can use to expend.
Yeah, the only time I'll defend, like, a fake socialist dictator is if he's trying to launch a shitcoin and I'm trying to get him not to have shitcoin. So basically, he could have an energy-dependent currency if he used Bitcoin, either a full switch to Bitcoin, or if they just did provable Bitcoin reserves at least.
Mm-hmm.
So they have like major, major mining operations. Like I've seen pictures from people there where they have both confiscated miners. They steal miners from people.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up.
They either force the miners to work for them a lot of times and give them a cut. And if they don't do that, then they actually confiscate the miners. And then they have new mining hardware. I remember something leaked that said, like, everything was banned except, like, remember they had a Bitmain exclusion on an actual ban?
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably taking, like, boatloads of cargo ships with Bitmain hardware. And the whole idea is they could take sanctioned oil, they convert it into Bitcoin by mining, mm-hmm. basically. They buy some ASICs. And they're able to convert that sanctioned oil into a way better revenue source in Bitcoin than if they were to sell it on the black market or to countries that don't accept the U.S. sanctions.
Yeah, a way better leverage ship, if you will.
So they could actually prove their reserves because they own all this Bitcoin, presumably. We mm-hmm. don't know that. But we're pretty sure they have a lot of Bitcoin. They could prove that by signing a message, which is the same thing we asked Craig Wright to do.
And he couldn't.
And he never did. He did all these theatrics and he never actually did. It's trivially easy to take your private keys and you can sign a message with them.
Well, the third member of the 3 of 4 multisig is dead.
Right.
So we'll never know.
So Satoshi is dead. So we have that bullshit. So he's like pretending it's backed by the Petro, but that's in the end of the day, that's just all bullshit to hide the fact, you know, that it's just a horrible measure to actually stop the inflation that his people are experiencing. And
I think it's interesting to see how, like, the geopolitical situation within Bitcoin is playing out and how it's obvious that Bitcoin has not hit the scene yet, because this is not obvious to the Nicolas Maduro regime. Like, if they don't get, well, that actually makes it's like a double-edged sword. Like, that makes me optimistic as well. How?
I think they realize, they're just like, if we can excuse our inflation with some cryptocurrency bullshit, like, you make it like a propaganda-y thing.
But the petro is like,
it doesn't matter to them.
The petro is a non-starter. It's like, literally doesn't even exist.
Right.
So
it's just, it's like,
but this makes
he's
me
desperate. Right?
This makes me optimistic. Like, governments aren't prepared for this yet. I bet some are more than others, obviously. But also, with that being said, for future references, thinking about the progression of this new show we're doing, maybe segments like get Alejandro Machado or Eduardo Medina on like a Skype call for like 5 minutes to talk about this stuff, because they
I would love that.
Yeah, they have their ears to the ground. So Alejandro or Eduardo, if you guys are listening, or anybody from Venezuela, maybe that's something we'll do in the future, like a little 5 minute segment or something like that.
Yeah, no, and this episode,
because we should not be talking about this subject from
this
Brooklyn.
Episode is literally just, we're just spitballing, and like, we would love feedback.
Yeah,
you know, give us your feedback, segment ideas, things like that, how to format the show. We just want to give you what you want.
Exactly.
I do always, I feel, I have a concern whenever I tweet about Venezuela or Iran or Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a white person in America, you know? So there's I don't understand exactly what you're going through. You know, I'm trying my best.
Mm-hmm.
I have, there's people who, I have Venezuelans who DM me, and like, they give me contacts and stuff. They're like, Matt, signal boost this, signal boost that, and that helps me a lot. But I am very concerned when I'm talking about these things.
Right.
Specifically, like today, I tweeted out that it doesn't matter if Maduro sanctions Bitcoin or not. Like, says that Bitcoin is currency. Like, the people can just accept it themselves.
All right. So yeah, know? And let's get into that. Chart of the day is local Bitcoin volumes denominated in Bitcoin within Venezuela, and this is actually an impressive chart. If you look at it, around this time last year, peaked, and then it troughed in December, and then it's on its way back towards the peak this year. And from chart perspective, it's a very deceiving chart, because what you don't realize is that the bottom of the trough is around December, when Bitcoin price was at its highest. So Venezuelans were only able to buy smaller amounts at a time. They couldn't expend more money. So it looks like the amount of Bitcoin being bought on local Bitcoins in Venezuela is pretty constant.
And basically, the chart shows how much Bitcoin is bought in Venezuela every day through local Bitcoins, right?
Yes.
Local Bitcoins allows you to P2P exchange between people. So it's two people, one person selling Bitcoin to the other person is giving them bolivars, either through bank account or through cash. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it goes through bank account. And we're nearing all-time highs in terms of how much Bitcoin is being purchased every week
in dollar terms. So like,
no, not in dollar terms, in Bitcoin terms.
In Bitcoin terms, yes.
Right. So like, we have July 25th around.
Yeah,
so like the week.
And that's what I'm interested to see.
Right?
Like, where was the price? Yeah, and that would make sense.
Around July 25th is when in late July was when they were buying the most Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go with price and stuff, it kind of seems like it was relatively consistent.
Exactly.
It's just that their bolivar went a shorter distance.
Yes.
And if you're in these countries, like, it's very easy to see the value prop of Bitcoin. If you can't get your hands on US dollars, which right now is probably absolutely still king.
Definitely.
But imagine you're a dev. If you're a dev in Venezuela, you can work online.
Mm-hmm.
You're independent of your economy. You're a global marketplace, and you can just get paid in Bitcoin. Like, that's amazing. Like, that is, you know, would you prefer US dollars? Sure. But would you prefer bolivars? No way. Like, there's not in a million years you would prefer bolivars. And it's like the stepping stones.
Right. Yes. And you would prefer US dollars. Even if you would prefer US dollars, you would have no way of getting them. Because
exactly.
You're sanctioned. Like, so Bitcoin is an only option at that point.
So when the Krugmans and stuff say, like, oh, they'd prefer Venmo, like, yeah, I'm sure. But actually, Venezuela blocked, you know, you can't use PayPal in Venezuela anymore. PayPal blocked it, I'm pretty sure. Not Venezuela, but...
Not Venmo, but PayPal and Venmo are the same.
No, the same company. Yeah, so you can't use either of those in Venezuela. So there you go, you know? Sanctioned country. Can't use them.
We...
Next topic.
next topic, but before we go on to that, like, just want the people of Venezuela to know, like, hey, I'm fucking pulling for you. Like,
oh, that actually reminds me, at BTC Ven, at BTC VEN, is Bitcoin Venezuela, which is, they're funding soup kitchens and stuff in Venezuela, and they accept Bitcoin donations. They seem like good people. I personally contributed. You should too.
Yeah,
probably.
We'll put their address in the show notes.
Yeah, or at least we'll put a link to their
to their
proposal. They have pictures there and stuff. It's pretty fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah. So and again, if anybody from Venezuela wants to help us give updates in the future, little 5-minute segments.
Yeah, reach out to us.
Yeah. All right, last segment here. You wanted to talk about Sia Coin. Is it Sia or Sia?
This is our last segment. Let's move through this one so go quick. Sia Coin. Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. I don't know too much about it.
It's a competitor to Storage and Filecoin. The whole idea is that it's like Dropbox, but instead of you paying Dropbox to store your shit for you, you pay some random guy to store your stuff for you. And that's the idea. They decided, they're Boston based, I'm pretty sure. They're definitely American based. And they decided that they're going to create their own ASIC. They decided this 8 months ago, 10 months ago, with the idea that ASICs make your network more secure, which they're not wrong about. Multiple companies have also decided to make ASICs. ASICs are specialized miners, if you don't know. They're specialized chips that are designed to mine whatever coin they're designed to
mine.
They
solve one specific problem, and with Bitcoin in particular, it's SHA-256
right,
hashing algorithm.
SIA, it's whatever their POW algo is. I don't know what it is. But anyway, these other companies beat them to the punch. They were slow to release, and now they're proposing a fork. They're just pushing through a fork that makes all the other miners obsolete, and their miners are the only ones that are able to work on the fork, and they're pretending that it's community driven, but at the same time, every single person who owns a miner has a worthless piece of shit now.
Freaks, Matt's really heated about this subject. I've never seen him this like jacked up about indiscretion in the crypto space.
So this isn't the first time they've proposed this. They proposed this back in January, and I had like a really, really nice thread about it. I thought it was a fantastic thread. David Vork.
Vork has some of the best Medium posts on mining and like the incentives and the economies of scale.
I think he's the CEO at Sia Tech.
Yeah, he wrote an incredible paper on the economies of scale afforded to Bitmain in particular. It's fascinating.
Yeah, so Vork followed me. They looked at I'd like to think they looked at the thread and they decided that was a bad idea. We shouldn't do this. And then here we are now.
Look at you. Big,
it's fucking
big
swinging August.
Dick on Twitter, changing to see the coins.
I liked the fact that I thought that they read my thread and they were like, this is a horrible idea. But here we are in August and it was 8 months later, 7 months later. And they're pushing through the same thing that they originally said they weren't going to do after they originally proposed it. And my main complaint is no one else is going to make ASICs for your network. Mm-hmm. Your network is going to be forever centralized. And at the end of the day, someone's going to store, it's a great example. So that's why everyone always uses it. Someone's going to store child porn or some kind of torrented video files. And the judge is going to say to them, you push out the code for the software, you made the white paper, you raised funds, and you're the only maker of miners that run the software. Obviously, you're hosting it. You know? It's the most short-sighted bullshit.
Right?
And it's from a coin that a lot of people said wasn't a shit coin, and...
Let's steel man this.
One
like
of the
what,
good guys.
What is the comeback response from? What's the justification of the hard fork?
Well, the justification is that Sia Tech is going to go out of business if they're not able to sell these ASICs that they've already sold. But if their ASICs launch in the market right now, they just aren't profitable. They're not bringing in enough Sia for the energy output and the competitors. beat them to the punch. And why would a small American company decide that they're going to try and competitively make, you know, mining equipment?
Fab chips.
Blows my mind. But the argument I've gotten in return is that Ciatek goes out of business if they don't.
I mean, what is the best case scenario in their minds?
Well, I don't know if they believe their bullshit, but they're basically saying that the community supports this fork, so it doesn't matter. Obviously, 100% of the hash rate disagrees with that because they're running miners that are going to get obsoleted.
Mm-hmm. Do they count, or is it all about nodes?
Both count.
Yeah.
I think it's a checks and balances type of situation. Would you agree?
I would agree wholeheartedly.
You're just trying to get me in a gotcha.
No. I'm trying to lead people through certain points of the rabbit hole.
He's trying to increase ratings.
No, I'm not.
We haven't told them the name of the show.
Yeah, I announced it. Rabbit Hole Recap with Matt and Marty.
That's what we're going to name it, by the way, guys. If you haven't heard that already. Can we fit in another topic?
Yeah, we definitely got 10 more minutes.
We can fit in two more topics.
We got 8 minutes. 8 minutes.
Bitcoin Cash vulnerability.
Oh. Yes, this was talked about last night at BitDevs too. Bitcoin Cash had a vulnerability that was disclosed a few weeks ago. Let me pull up the website here real quick. All right. Yes, that was another thing that was brought up at BitDevs last night, was the responsible disclosure of the bug in Bitcoin Cash. And I believe it had to do with a certain opcode. Let me see here. Yeah, no, excuse me, a SIGHASH bug. So they had a SIGHASH bug that was, I guess it was in the open for at least a couple weeks, at least.
I think it was longer than that.
It
was because they refactored a bunch of shit.
Okay.
So they decided to rewrite a bunch of shit that already worked.
Mm-hmm.
And they pushed it out with minimal
review
on that. And Corey Fields, one of the Bitcoin core contributors, realized that.
And was kind enough to disclose this bug anonymously. That's another thing that's actually pretty interesting about this article, is the ethics of disclosing. So apparently, I just learned this week, like, when you disclose, you should do it anonymously.
Well, no, that's to cover your ass.
Exactly.
Which was a smart move.
But it's the ethical move as well.
I wouldn't say necessarily ethical move.
Yeah.
But you don't. I support it, you know, but I
don't want to leave that blind
side. You're doing it for your own self-interest.
Which,
right?
But
that's not necessarily ethical.
But I would say it's ethical in the sense that to make this disclosure, you have to put, like, you have to go through some shady shit to make the disclosure.
Basically,
so that journey to make the action is actually more ethical than some would give
basically
credit for.
Basically, Corey was worried that it was going to be exploited in between the time when he reported. He didn't trust the people he was reporting it to.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Bitcoin Cash didn't have like a good way of reporting it.
Okay.
So he had to go out of his way. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, if you report it to the wrong person, that person might exploit it and then be like, Corey exploited it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He emailed me about it.
Exactly.
So Corey didn't trust the people he was reporting it to. So in his defense, like, it makes complete sense to do it. So he did it anonymously. This was a couple months ago, I think. A month ago?
Yeah, this is the post-mortem just came out.
And then he acknowledged it now. He acknowledged it a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
But the simple end of the day is that the Bitcoin Cash devs refactored a bunch of code. They rewrote it for no reason. They didn't do any review on it. They did minimal fucking review on it. And it had a major vulnerability in it that would have split the network and would have lost tons of people, lots of money. Wouldn't have lost any money.
Would have fucked up Bitmain's IPO.
And it affects all of us. Because it doesn't just, the Bitcoin Cash holders, like, yes, like, they'd get fucked the most, and it would have been kind of beautiful, but if they got like a Coinbase or a Shapeshift or a Binance, and they really screwed them on a double spend because they split the network in a malicious way at the right time,
mm-hmm.
it would have hurt the whole ecosystem.
Exactly. Is that?
It would hurt Bitcoin Cash the most.
Do you think it would hurt Bitcoin? How much would it hurt Bitcoin?
In short term, it would hurt Bitcoin.
Okay.
Long term, Bitcoin, Honey Badger, doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
Be completely fine.
A lot of people were pissed that...
short term, it would have caused a capitulation wick.
A lot of people... it would have. A lot of people are pissed, though, that Corey didn't let it be and maybe not exploit it himself, but let somebody else find it and exploit it.
If it was me, hypothetically, and I was Corey, I would not have hypothetically reported it.
You don't have to get a hypothetical. He did it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have done that. You know, I probably not.
Are you a lesser man because of that?
I'm not saying that I would, you know, I don't, there's no criminal act happening here, but I'm just saying that.
What did you
I do? Might not have reported.
Are
it
you trying think, to tell us that you found this bug before, Corey?
No,
and
I
thought
wish,
about attacking
I wish.
It?
If I just think that Bitcoin Cash dying sooner rather than later is for the greater good. The only reason it's at the price it's currently at is because four or five people are supporting the price, including Bitmain, which we've recently found out as holding a boatload of fucking Bitcoin Cash.
Yes. And I would agree to an extent. I would say, yes, let it fail on its merit. And if somebody exploited that bug, it would have failed on its merit. The merit would have been shitty via the review process. But I think there's, I don't want to get too political with this stuff, but I think there is a little bit benefit for the Bitcoin maximalist case in general. If Bitcoin Cash is prolonged, because I'm pretty confident that they are so technically and organizationally incompetent that it's just going to be a slow drag of their reputation, like over years, and it's going to be definitive after a certain amount of time that like these guys have been completely discounted.
No, I want to be clear here that I think that forks and altcoins are no threat to Bitcoin. Like I personally feel that if you believe strongly enough in Bitcoin as both a technology, a community, and just as like a seismic shift, like you don't worry about them because they're not even close. You know, it's not even, and yes, it is like a complete reaffirmation of the fact that you go slow and steady, mm-hmm. conservative. You know, you're moving billions of dollars. You don't want to fuck that up.
You're moving more money than gold settles every day.
Like, exactly. You're creating
a
global financial
system. This is actually pretty heavy
shit
now. I mean,
if you're creating a global financial system, you don't want fuck ups.
It's interesting because like it is just a drop in the bucket still, like multi $100 trillion total addressable market potentially.
Got that TAM.
That TAM. And it's only a fraction of that, less than 1% probably. And but it's still surpassing incumbents in function. So the amount of dollars settled per day on Bitcoin is now more than gold on a daily basis, and that's pretty good benchmark to surpass at some point, I would argue, psychologically.
Yes.
Matt just got lost in my blue eyes.
Yeah, I got completely lost, so I just said yes.
But I would argue that. So what are we moving on to next?
Do we have another topic or are we done?
An hour and a half, but we probably like have to cut out
Do
like 5 minutes.
Do you have another topic?
Yeah, so I guess the last topic we'll touch on pertains to the ETN, the exchange traded note that is now available to Fidelity customers via their brokerage accounts.
It's not just Fidelity.
I thought it was just Fidelity.
Is it really?
I'm pretty positive it's just Fidelity.
I haven't tried to buy because you honestly shouldn't buy any of this shit.
So let's
go on your own.
Yeah, it's gonna be. So this has actually been a heated topic. I feel like the sentiment. I mean, we can jump into this in general. General topic is exchange traded notes, exchange traded funds, whatever it may be, an ETF, an ETN, but basically products that give institutional investors access to Bitcoin, access and exposure to Bitcoin via traditional financial institutions. For a lot of the beginning of the summer, and I would say spring, beginning of summer, a lot of the bullish potential was based off the potential for an ETF approval. Bitcoin maximalists, myself included, definitely written and spoken about this. It would be extremely bullish because they have to buy the underlying Bitcoin, but I don't know if I completely agree with this, but more recently people have like been nagging on that, like, hey, maybe we don't need an ETF. Curious to see what you think, and like, have you noticed that as well?
Well, first of all, ETF is inevitable. Second of all,
have you noticed that though?
What have I noticed? It's recently become more negative.
Yes.
Which is, of course, that's going to happen as we get denied more often. You know, I've been waiting for a Bitcoin ETF since 2013 when the Winklevosses said they were going to, the Winklevi said they were going to launch their ETF. I think I wouldn't have known an ETF, but an ETF is dope. You know, you have anybody who has a TD Ameritrade account or a Robinhood, well, Robinhood, you can just trade it now, but you don't own the underlying Bitcoin. But any of these brokerage accounts, Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, whatnot, you'd be able to buy Bitcoin. And you don't have to worry about any of the technical specifics of it, and you get exposure to it. And if any ETFs decide to go the non-backed route, right, and they're working on, like, fractional reserves, like, I think in the next Bitcoin bubble they get fucked, right?
Right.
So I don't see the negative downside. I think it gives people more exposure with a new custodial option.
And right? this is a good topic to jump into. Should, before these products be brought onto the market, should we develop standards that say, hey, should we draw a hard line in the sand and say these need to be fully reserved and there needs to be proof every quarter, every semi-annually, every year, every 3 years, whatever it may be, we need proof that you have the reserves.
I mean, that'd be nice.
Is it possible?
No.
Why not?
Because we're going to tell them that? Like, that's
we'll maybe, draw the line in the sand.
The market might, right? So if you have an ETF that is full reserve and you have an ETF that's not full reserve, like the ETF that's full reserve is going to do better. It's going to command a premium because it's legit, right?
Yes.
And I think the market will figure itself out, you know, but they're not going to listen to us if we tell them that they should go full reserve.
The counterpoint to that, what if it's a game theoretical situation too, where the first ETF to go full reserve actually benefits the most in the market?
They probably do. Yeah, they probably do. I fail to see the reasoning where there's any kind of attack vector here or anything, is my point. Mm-hmm. I think Bitcoin is designed to go up forever. It is literally designed that way. It's designed to, in every other metric, to go up forever. Like, if you value it in any other thing, it's gonna trend up forever, and the price will have extreme volatility that will reduce as time goes on, but you'll have extreme volatility, but over time it'll go up forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's designed.
Yeah.
And if you go fractional reserve in that situation and you're way too leveraged, like, you're gonna get fucked.
Yeah.
And the market will route itself around that. But the ETFs in general open exposure to Bitcoin.
Exactly.
and allow more buyers to buy in into a truly fixed supply. Like we don't know how much gold there is. You can keep mining it right now. It's just, how much does it cost you to mine it? We don't know exactly how much is there. You know, with Bitcoin, you have that purely fixed supply, and they just get fucked. If it runs up, they get fucked.
Yeah, and I'm happy you brought that up about, like, it being a new on and off ramp to exposure of Bitcoin, because I actually wrote this in the newsletter today. On the 17th, last Friday, I believe, the folks from CoinShares, in particular Ryan Radloff, posted... provocative Medium post, I would say.
That's the ETN, by the way.
Is
the
it?
New ETN.
Hey, yeah, it's CoinShares?
It's CoinShares.
Okay. So
this is their Stockholm, NASDAQ, and now it's tradable OTC in America.
Yeah. And so he wrote this incredible Medium post, wrote about it today. Half of the remaining non-minted Bitcoin supply is spoken for. And he basically said, anytime Bitcoin adoption has gone up, it's obviously because new on and off ramps have developed throughout the years, and that's usually when you see a precipitous increase in adoption. So he basically wrote this paper and said a lot of people think the institutional money is going to drive the price to 100,000, but, like, people are going to be waiting on the sidelines for the institutional money, and retail is going to drive it up that high in the meantime as people watch by.
I mean, the the sum of all retail money is way bigger.
Yeah.
It's just retail usually can't get access to this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I mean, me and you are just unabashedly bulls, right?
Yes.
We don't, I don't understand what selling Bitcoin is. Like, in hindsight, like, I probably should have sold at the top, you know? But
that's why we're drinking our
if I could have timed it, I would have. But I can't.
Exactly.
And I there's not that much Bitcoin to go around, right? At the end of the day, like, there's very little Bitcoin.
So I do not trust myself. It's very well known that I've had very few credit cards. I just got my first credit card.
Very few credit cards. He literally just got his
first credit card. I do not trust myself. Like, if I were to sell my Bitcoin at the top, I do not think I would be able to time the bottom and get back the same amount of Bitcoin that I sold at the top.
Yeah, but even if you bought it at like 14K, like, you would be better than if
Yes. But yeah, would I have the willpower?
The thing is, you would FOMO buy in and panic sell out.
Exactly.
And you would panic sell out. Come on.
I got this.
Come on, take the last bit. All right. We're keeping that in. You better keep that into the podcast.
It's in there.
We're just finishing the Macallan 15. We'll drink Macallan 18 once we turn into a bull trend.
Yes.
That's a promise.
Yes.
We're gonna stick with 15. If we go under 3K, we're gonna switch to 12. We're gonna switch to Macallan 12. And then
I'd say we switch to Jack if it goes under 12.
No, fuck that. I'm not drinking Jack. I'm not, you know, we're not doing that.
Don't be so uppity.
People are listening to us. You have to have a certain level of composure.
I think you lost composure there, so you can't drink Jack. Kidding. But
classic Philly.
That is the Philly special. $5. Yeah, you get a PBR exactly. And a Jack Daniels.
I know it's
shot.
A Philly special.
It's a great special. $5 at participating bars.
So is that are we done for the week?
I think so. That was a good hour.
We love you guys. Please give us your feedback, right?
Let's give a little recap. So we talked about Bitcoin Cash going through a little turbulence right now.
Vulnerability.
Bitmain as well, alongside that vulnerability. Cash App getting hot. Definitely check it out if you haven't.
Yeah, the bullshit Petro bullshit.
Yeah, Venezuela went through what they're doing there. If anybody's in Venezuela listening to this by chance, please reach out. We'd love to talk to you.
Sia.
Sia. Bad decision.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Fuck them.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Not happy with them.
Like, I thought you read my thread.
Matt is not happy.
I thought you read the thread.
Read his threads. Come on, people.
We have Square Cash fucking killing it. We have the ETN. We have the Bitmain IPO. Did I miss anything?
No. I think we're going to cut out the recap. I think it's redundant, right?
The recap is a little bit. Whatever.
We can cut it out. That was a good riff, though.
I kind of like the recap. We'll just keep this part in.
Okay.
Just keep it in.
All right. We're going
to
keep it in.
Saying that we're going to cut it out. I think it like adds more
allure
to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. We're going to keep it in.
Just give us your feedback, right?
You're hearing us think out loud here.
Yeah. We're just going to.
We're spitballing.
That's the point of this. This idea is that you get us.
If there's one thing I learned at the
you
UX,
get our takes.
If there's one thing I learned at the UX bootcamp I went to, it's that you can design anything, including a podcast and the segments you go to.
This is what we're trying to design.
It's an iterative process. Iterative. All right, this is the first iteration.
Give us feedback
of the rabbit hole recap with Matt and Marty. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Fuck yeah! Buy Bitcoin.